What is up, guys, and welcome to the Meeple Miner Podcast, the podcast where we talk all things table top gaming. My name is Jason.
I'm James.
And I'm Ant.
How are you doing this week, guys?
Yeah, all good, mate. All good.
We're back again.
We are.
A bit sooner after the last episode than we announced it would be, which is interesting. Yeah, somewhat trying to go back to a weekly schedule, aren't we?
We are.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we will get there. I promise we will get there. But yeah, how have things been this week? I know I only saw you guys last night, but these people didn't. So yeah, what have you been up to, James?
I've just started my 2 weeks of holiday, Jason. I know. Hate me.
I do. I have done for many years, but just the hatred is now flowing through me even more.
Yeah, it's mutual, mate.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. It's the best form of like partnership, isn't it? It's just pure hatred.
Our friendship runs on mutual loathing.
Over people's time off.
Indeed. Now, welcome to the crew, Anne.
This is it.
This is what we do. We just hate each other, obviously.
I dread mine when I get mine, then you guys will start hating me.
Yes.
How have
good.
You?
Good. Let the hate flow through.
How have you been, Ant? What have you been up to recently?
All good. Normally the same as always. Working and gaming.
Excellent. Well, at least you included the gaming part.
Yes.
That's the important bit. Working is so that we can game, isn't it?
Really? Exactly.
Buy games.
It funds our hobby, doesn't it?
So. It does, yeah. I mean, there's other things like bills and unimportant things.
Oh, yeah, all that jazz as well.
Yeah, family and that stuff. You know, it's all second to gaming, because gaming is life.
It is.
But we've been gaming quite a bit recently, which has been
We certainly have.
But, if you haven't figured it out, we're doing a new type of show today. How are we feeling about it, guys?
Good.
Yeah, a little bit nervous, because...
Let's see how we get on with it first, and then if people like it, we can carry on with it, can't we? So.
Exactly, yeah. We'll start by talking about the games we played last year. Now, obviously, Ant, you weren't with us last year. However, I know that you have played all of these games.
That's all right, then. That's okay, then.
So in the month of sort of February last year, we had played three different games, and we talked about three different games. James, let's start with Starship Captains.
Ooh, Starship Captains.
Have we played Starship Captains since?
We have.
We have. Quite a few times, in fact.
We have.
We did, yeah.
Yeah. Anthony, you've joined us recently for playing Starship Captains, from what I remember.
Yeah, because I played it when it first came out on Essen nearly 2 years ago, and I hadn't played it since.
Yeah.
So I kind of asked you guys to
play it before we did.
And you know, it's still a great game. I still can play that bad boy any day, really, to be honest.
Star Trek, the board game, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
But better.
Which is usually something that would put me off, because I don't like Star Trek, but I do like Starship Captains, which is good. I've now, since that episode, I've now got my lovely swanky insert that's all
UV colored. It is very nice, I have to admit. I do love the UV prints, I have to admit.
So good, isn't it? It's Polish Games that makes them all.
Eraptor, whatever it's called, yeah.
Whatever they've rebranded to nowadays. Really, really good. I think you've now got the Beast insert.
I do, yes.
How's that one compare?
It makes the box even bigger, if that makes any sense, but it's lovely.
Did it need to be any bigger?
No, it didn't, but you can't close the lid properly from now on. Stupid, but it's beautiful when you open it.
How much does the...
Not an awful lot.
Okay, so is it within acceptable boundaries?
Yeah.
I think that's a whole topical on its own, isn't it?
It's not quarter up the box, so it's not too bad.
What is the acceptable box lift?
That's an episode.
It is an episode. Adding to the list, right?
There we go.
Hex. What an episode title. Acceptable box lift.
Good God, are we scraping the barrel for episodes already?
That could be two separate episodes, because that could be one, how much can the box lid actually lift off? And two, games that make that satisfying noise when you lift off the box lid.
Oh, the traditional box fart.
The box fart, that's it, yeah.
See, there are some pretty damn good box farts out there, though. Let's be honest now. But, yes... Starship Captains, how are you feeling about it a year on, James?
I still very much enjoy it every time it comes to the table.
I'm not going to lie, when I added it to the list earlier, first thing that went through my head is, I kind of wish I was playing that this evening now.
True, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good sign. The fact that I want to play it a year on, I think it's in amongst the community. I think it's lost a little bit of its hype, but I think there's still people playing it.
It's still good to go back to, though.
Yeah,
most definitely.
It's not a game that I'm seeing on the tables all the time now, which is a bit of a shame. I think it deserves a bit more love. Do you think we'll see an expansion for it in the near future? I don't know. I've not heard of anything, but...
I mean, it's... Because of its theme, it is an expandable game, I think. There are lots...
Or a sequel, even.
Yeah, or a sequel. It's one of those games, I don't know how you guys feel about it, after playing it, I'm a bit like, I want this game, but a little bit more now.
Or longer, anyway.
Yeah. So I'm not into my like super, super heavyweight games, but I've played it, I've enjoyed it, but I do find myself wishing it had a little bit more to it now. Yeah. I'd like a game with this kind of theme that's just a little bit more in depth.
Mm.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting thought. I don't know if I share those sentiments personally. I quite like the quick, easy mentality of the game, but I could also go for something a bit heavier, I reckon. Maybe an extra mechanism putting in there or something along those lines.
Mm.
I wouldn't want to see an expansion that brings like a fifth player module and all that garbage that they tend to like to stick into expansions.
Mm. Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to see a bit more. Starship Captains, I think I agree with that. But yeah. Still a thumbs up for me.
Yep.
You?
Yep.
Yeah.
And two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. Wow. That's a seal of endorsement right there.
Yeah.
Okay, so next game that we played last year, James, one of my personal favourite filler games, was Cover Your Assets.
Oh, we do love a bit of Cover Your Assets.
We do. And Ant?
Yeah?
This is, I mean, we know this is a game that reeks of me douchebaggery on a plate.
Of course.
Stealing things from everyone else. Not getting anything legitimately. Perfect. Perfect little card.
What more
could
Jason want, eh?
If I didn't love that game, and I do apologise to the person I'm about to single out here, but if I didn't love that game as much as I do, I'd love it even more because of what happened to Dave. That was beautiful.
It really was. James, would you care to explain?
It's just the fact that...
Obviously, Ant wasn't here for this. It was hilarious.
Please explain.
At the gaming club when he was playing it with Paul, our newsman.
It was his first time.
It was. And he just got to the point where he was picking up stuff and immediately giving it to Paul.
Yeah. Literally the whole entire game. Paul was the next player after Dave. Dave would cash in two cards or whatever, gain that, and then Paul would immediately challenge it. And he had nothing to defend it with. So, and it literally just happened every single turn.
Yeah, so the last couple of rounds, Dave was literally picking stuff up and handing it straight to Paul.
Yeah, I think he ended the game with something like 70K. It was abysmal.
Yeah.
On a positive note, though, it was also, we played two games that night. They were the two worst games I've ever played. Because I also only ended with, I think it was 60K in one and 50K in the other.
Okay. Yeah.
Because, people, if it wasn't Paul picking on Dave, everyone was picking on me.
Yeah.
So,
target.
Especially Gail.
Yes.
She took to that game like a duck to water.
She did indeed, yes.
And she absolutely did you over, which was also hilarious to
watch. It was, yes. I guess I had my comeuppance after playing that game for quite some time. And yeah, basically doing that to everyone else. Everyone now knows my playstyle on it, so they just go for me.
Yep.
Which is a shame because I do love that game, but it does open itself to that, I guess. But I still love it.
It's kind of one of those rare games where it's okay because that's the point of the game.
Yes. Yeah.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you obviously weren't here to talk about it, Ant. What are your thoughts on Cover Your Assets?
I love it. I mean, when Paul introduced it to us, I bought it immediately straight after. Yep. My family like it. My parents like it. My brother-in-law and sister really enjoy playing it as well. It's one of those ones that's just, you know, nice, quick, easy to play, easy to learn.
Yeah.
And everyone enjoys it, even with the different modulars, like the penny jar and stuff like that as well. It's a good thing to throw in as well. So, or the movement cards as well. So, no, yeah. I really do like it.
Good. So you play it with your family, which is obviously always fun. Is it the new Monopoly for you, though?
No.
Family destroying?
No, not yet. Yeah. Okay. Not yet, anyway.
Not yet.
Not quite yet.
Definitely has that potential, though, right?
If they keep attacking me, then maybe.
Got to disown the family over a game like that, let's be honest.
That's true.
But yeah, again, I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Yep, definitely thumbs up from me.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching. That's it. Thumbs up all round. Third and final game that we talked about this time last year, James, was Unmatched, and we were talking about T-Rex and Dr. Sattler. Now, this was the first time that we talked about Unmatched on the show.
It was.
It was actually my first set, I believe it was, that I owned. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on not so much Unmatched, because I think it's common knowledge we really like the game system, but that particular box.
That particular
one. A year on.
It was the first one that I'd ever played, so the first set that I'd ever played as well. And having played the others, I would say it would be the last one that I reach for.
Okay.
In all honesty. Okay. It's not a bad set, but once you've played the other sets, it's a bit meh.
Mm.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because I like even compared to the other Jurassic Park set, which is
it is way better that one though. Yeah,
the Raptors and Robert Muldoon.
Yeah,
is just a better set.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously the person that introduced me to Unmatched. How do you feel about this set?
I love Unmatched, but I'm going to go with James on this one. It's definitely not one to have as a starter kit because majority of them are just two-player ones, aren't they?
They are,
But this one definitely you should not have as a starter one. Still have it in your set, don't get me wrong, because there are still Ellie Sattler and you know Jeff Goldblum statue, little figurines and stuff. But
yeah,
it's that T-Rex one is a bit of a, like I said, not the greatest of characters to really start with, is it? So
yeah, I mean, I think I have to agree. It's probably one of my least favourite Unmatched sets that they have released, which is hard for me to say because I am the same as you.
Yeah.
I absolutely love Jurassic Park. That was an instant sell for me. That's why it was the first one that I bought. But yeah, the T-Rex is very, very, I won't say tough to play because it's not tough to play. It's just very slow and it's easily beaten.
Yeah, that's the issue.
Especially if
the other character keeps running away all the time.
Exactly. I would actually disagree with the Dr. Sattler thing. So I actually have played Dr. Sattler a few times since then in amongst other players, and she actually holds her own.
Yes, definitely.
But I could not say the same about the T-Rex.
No.
Because at the end of the day, it's big, it's scary. The first thing you're going to do is run away from it.
Mm.
If you know you're going up against it, you're going to take a ranged character. And you've won, basically, haven't you?
Pretty much.
You've got a ranged character that can move fast. You've won.
Yeah. Especially if she only moves once as well, when everyone else can move two or three.
Exactly, And, you know, and obviously, you can boost your movement and stuff like that, but that is the problem with the T-Rex, isn't it? You are being milled down. You're burning through that deck quickly, and then it just... If you haven't died already from ranged attacks, you're going to die because you've run out of cards. And you still need to move.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the downside of that set.
I can't remember if I said it in the actual episode we did as well. I also kind of don't feel like the two characters you get to go up against the T-Rex are particularly thematic after watching the film. Yeah. I kind of feel it should have been Ian Malcolm and...
Yeah, it's a bit odd how it's not... It should have been Alan Grant and the T-Rex.
Alan Grant,
And it should have been, why Sattler in there? I don't know if it's like a copyright thing or Sam Neill didn't want his character on maybe they're doing later ones, who knows?
Yeah, it's entirely possible. But like you said, I definitely feel it should have been Ian Grant and...
Yeah. I do wonder whether they were planning on doing more sets with it because we now know that the license has expired.
Yeah.
They don't have that anymore. But it's weird how they only got two sets, two-player sets.
Yeah.
Whereas every other IP they've done, they've had multiple sets. You know, the Marvel ones, there was five sets, I believe, you know, talking about it a little bit later as well. But the Witcher set that's been announced, we've already known three of the sets.
Even like the Myths and Legends had like two free volumes as well.
Exactly, So it's weird how that one only had two.
Definitely.
The question, I think it was their first IP set. As far as
I think it was, because that's what got me into Unmatched was that IP.
Yeah.
And then backtracked with the other ones. But
maybe it was just they didn't go for the full license. Who knows?
Yeah, because I think we did talk about it on the actual episode. It's just like the board art is the scene, isn't it? It's the upturned Jeep. And so it should be Alan Grant. Yeah. I'll get the name right. Alan, because I just realised I got the name wrong. I said Ian Grant. Alan Grant and Ian Malcolm with the flares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like... When Dr. Sattler comes along, it's when they're in the Jeep running away.
Yeah, exactly. So, it is an interesting set, but I'm going to go first on this one and actually say I'm not going to give this a thumbs down, but I'm also not going to give it a thumbs up. It's definitely a sort of mid-ground.
Thumbs middle.
For me. It's a thumbs middle for me. Do I recommend people buying it, considering it's out of print now as well? No, it's not worth the money that it currently sells for. So what about you, James? A thumbs up, thumbs down, or
something else? It's Unmatched. Which is a positive, but as I said in the opening to this bit, pretty much every other set is superior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
But 2 out of 3, we gave thumbs up still a year on, so that's pretty good, and I'm happy enough with that. But in the past month, guys, as we've said, we've been playing a fair few games. Have there been any standouts to either of you that you want to sort of say games that you've played and that you rather enjoyed, or maybe it was a negative experience?
For me,
we play quite a few.
We have played loads, but then I have met up with the guys from Legend of Podcasting quite a few times as well, and I finally got to play Witcher Old World, which is what I wanted to buy and purchase at Expo last year, and they didn't have it in stock in the end.
Yeah.
So having one of those guys buy it and to actually sit down and teach it as well. A great game, but it is so friggin' long. That's the only issue really? With it now. It's like, if you play it, you're going to be... It's a 2-3 hour game.
Oh, wow.
If that. With setup as well, maybe 4 hours, who knows. But that stood out for me probably like the last month or so.
Okay.
It was really good. It was a lot of fun.
What sort of game is it?
So it's a deck builder as well as worker placement, if you will. But not quite a worker placement, as in like you take a mini and put it back. You have to actually travel the map. And like go certain places. Yeah. But your deck of cards is your movement, it's your health bar, and it's also your currency as well at the same time. Okay. So it's a lot to take in, but once you get used to all the symbols and stuff, it's not that bad, to be honest. It's quite easy going.
I've quite enjoyed having that sort of new brand, shall we say, of deck builder. Because obviously another game that we've played this month was Robot Quest Arena.
Yes, it was. Oh, yes.
Another deck builder that had a purpose.
That game was so good. Yeah. That was a great game. I'm not going to lie.
And you guys are segueing in straight to the game that I was going to highlight, which was Robot Quest Arena, that's a standout one for me because I really enjoyed it. And as you guys have already pointed out, it's like, it's really nice to play a deck builder with a purpose.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
definitely. And the amount of Robot Wars quotes we were having while we were playing that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because you two are bigger fans of Robot Wars. I used to watch it, but I was never like a huge fan of it. But so when I was into this, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm going to like this or not, but this is so much fun, man. It was really good and really easy to pick up as well.
And we joke about it being Robot Wars the board game. It is all but licensed, right? You are controlling a robot. You're using deck building mechanics in order to move and attack other robots. You are literally in an arena that has all of the usual CPZ things in the corner. You don't have house robots yet. I really hope that's something that comes in the future. You know, you've got the Pit of Doom, you've got the flamethrowers and all of that kind of
awesomeness. Even just smacking them against the wall took help off as well.
It did,
which is a good thing.
Yeah. And I think for me, one of the standout things with that game, though, are actually the minis. Because they come pre-painted.
Yeah, they were great. I'm not going to lie. Just when I saw it, I thought that someone had spent a lot of time on these things. Yeah. And when you said no, they come in the box like this, I'm like, no way.
I would actually stick my neck out and say, I think for games that come with pre-painted minis, I don't think I've seen a better one than that game. They have come out of the box absolutely stunning. So I that was a huge highlight for me.
Definitely.
James, was there a particular thing that stood out to you
aside from the massive nostalgia trip? Because like you said, it is bar a license, it's Robot Wars the board game.
Yeah.
But yeah, like all of those things, it's like, I mean, about like you said, you use the cards for movement, you use them to build your attacks, and they are all the things that you remember from shows like that. I mean, all that's missing is the ability to flip.
Yes.
Which, hello, expansion, please.
Yeah.
I want to be able to flip robots over.
Well, we know that, because it was something that has been announced within the past month or so, that there is going to be a new, I believe it's a crowdfunding campaign, probably a GameFound campaign.
Yeah, it is GameFound, it is.
Where they're releasing at least 4 new robots, which I think is pretty cool. A bigger map, because that was something I believe both me and James.
I think you got to 11 players, this one.
Is it?
It goes from 2 to 11, yeah.
Damn. See, you're getting that bigger map, but it's not bigger.
It'd be big enough for 11 players, let's put it that way.
6 players anyway.
Yeah. Okay. If I didn't love that game anymore, the Spinal Tap implication of the fact that it goes to 11.
It goes to 11.
It's just the cherry on the cake.
Yeah. That's it.
I can only imagine the carnage that with 11 players. I mean, I don't know how you'd get 11 players round a table to actually play it, but goddamn, I want to try.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like fun to me.
Speaking of deck builders, we played Legendary a couple of times,
didn't we?
We did.
Yes, James, you'd gone home.
I had.
You were antisocial and you'd given up for the night. Me and Ant were just like, no, it's the night is still young at 10 p.m.
And you decided to inflict pain on yourself by setting up Legendary at 10 o'clock.
We did, yes. We did. So I didn't think we'd start playing until like 20 to 12.
That doesn't surprise me.
But yeah, we've had a fair few games Legendary.
So we did recently. Villains at first, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
And then we done the Planet Hulk one another time, didn't we? Which I wanted to play for ages. But the villain one was interesting.
Yeah? How did you find it? Because that was your first time of playing the villains.
Yeah. I mean, first off, let's just talk about the artwork on the cards. This is why I love Legendary Marvel. It's just, I'm a big fan of comic book art. And these cards, every time a card came out, it was just, I was flabbergasted. It was like taking photos of it and everything. Yeah. It just, I love all the, but playing as the villains was very interesting because it was like a twist turn on things that you had to do. Because I'm used to doing this and that. And then in this one, it's like, oh no, you actually do it this way now. Yeah. And whatnot. So that was quite an interesting mechanic to the vision, the villain side of this as well.
Because I've always actually, if I'm being honest, I actually prefer the villains version of the game, but I've always preferred villains. So of course.
Yeah.
The problem is, obviously, that hasn't got many expansions. It's got one expansion. Whereas, if you want the replayability, you kind of want my full Legendary collection. Yeah. But yeah, the Villains one was just such a special box because you got a neoprene mat as standard, which is gorgeous. Mm, you got
lovely.
Quite a lot of the mechanics that came from the Dark City expansion, but built into the core thing there. And yeah, just playing as a villains, going up against the good guys.
Yeah, definitely.
Is basically the same, but somehow different. It's really good fun. James, I know you haven't played Villains for a while.
Yep.
But what were your memories of the villains?
I mean, it's been that long. I'm going to be 100% honest that I can't actually remember.
No, that's fair. That's fair. We might have to get you to play that again soon.
Yep.
See, that's the weird thing. It's been on my could possibly sell pile for a while, but having played it again, it's managed to work its way off that pile.
It's one of those ones, again, that is, you play it for a couple of times and it hits the shelf for another year or two, and then you like go back to it. It's a shame because it is brilliant, and every time I play it, it always reminds me of how much I do like this game.
Yeah.
You know?
And the key thing, really, with the fact that we have played normal Legendary and also the Villains Legendary is I probably enjoy playing the Villains one a bit more.
Mm.
Mainly because I didn't have to go through thousands of cards.
I'll be honest,
trying to fill it up, because obviously I've kept it very separate. It's its own standalone thing, so the setup is a lot quicker.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I think I preferred the Planet Hulk one. Mm. I like the transform mechanic to that.
Yes.
I liked how every character had its own deck as well as a transform deck, and that was so good as well. Like Bruce Banner can now transform into Ultimate Smashing Hulk. And
exactly, depending on what you did on your turn.
Yeah.
I've played this card, which gives me this. However, because I've done that, he now gets angry, transforms into Gladiator Hulk.
That's it, yeah.
And then suddenly he's kicking two shades of excrement out of someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's such a really good mechanic. And then obviously that transformed card is then in your deck, but the next time you use that transformed card, he transforms back.
But gives you like a massive ton of damage or money, exactly, whatever it is, isn't it? There's always a reason to transform them, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really liked that, so I'm going with that.
You're sort of buying the base value card where it's not really that great, but the actual transformed card is horrifically powerful. So you're getting a card that's powerful and weak, 50-50.
And the thing is that when it transforms, you can't use that card straight away either. You have to wait till at least you draw it out again.
James, you haven't played the World War Hulk set.
I have not. Yet,
so this transform keyword is new to you. How do you like the sound of it?
I mean, it sounds interesting, although I think we've spoken about it when we did episodes on Legendary. It's like, I like the two of you. I always find Legendary is a bit meh. I don't... Okay. Not enjoy it. It's just one of those games that I'm not particularly fussed about.
It's
fair.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, it's one I have to play every time it comes to table or anything. Yeah. But if someone makes it, I'll be up for it. I wouldn't be like, nah, I can't be bothered. Sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just my overriding perspective on Legendary is, like you said, we haven't played it for so long, but I can't honestly say I'm disappointed about that.
Yeah. No, that's understandable.
It's one of those games where it's like, yeah, if it's out, I'll sit down. But
yeah,
it's not like I've got to play it.
It's understandable. And, you know, it's common knowledge. It's one of my favorite games of all time, in fact. But I'd say that's mainly because of its replayability. But its replayability with my collection is also its downfall. Mm. It's also the reason it doesn't see the table, because I just cannot be bothered. with the setup and teardown of that game. Like when we played the other night, and I didn't pack it up that night. I didn't even pack it up the next day.
Did you not?
I literally packed it up. In fact, James was already here yesterday.
And you were packing it away.
Just finishing packing it away.
Yep.
So it sat there for 2.5 days because I just couldn't be bothered to separate it all out and put it away.
Yeah.
God bless dividers.
I know you're, Jason, I know you're quite a big deck builder fan. I think with me, deck builders are very Marmite. I'm either really like them or I'm just not fussed about them.
Yeah.
It's just one of those mechanics where it's a bit... It's going to be a bit hit and miss as to whether I'm going to really be champing at the bit to play it or a bit like, meh, not fast.
Yeah, no, I can totally understand that. But it's been really good to play that again. I've got one more game I'd like to talk about, and this was a game that Ant brought over. Was a game that I was interested in playing, but I didn't have enough investment in it to want to back it when it was on, I think it was crowdfunding, which was Terrascape.
Oh, of course. Yes. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Now, that was a really fun game for me. Now... Poor old Ant, you didn't stand a chance against us in
the box. I'm just either rubbish as the killer or the game's probably broken with a certain character.
It would be really interesting to see because obviously we played two games in succession. And in both those games, it was myself and James versus you as the bad guy. And from what I remember, because it was a few weeks ago now.
Yeah, it was a while.
The objective of the game is we had to complete... one of two objectives or something without being found by yourself.
Yes.
So the hidden movement aspect of that game was actually us, not you.
Mm.
So we knew where you were at all times.
But I didn't know where you
were. But you didn't know where we were, which I thought was a really interesting mechanic. You know, we've obviously played Beast recently, which was the...
It's a role reversal, wasn't it?
Yeah. Which is what I normally expect from a hidden movement game. It's usually everyone versus one person. And that one person is the person who's hidden.
Yes, yeah.
Whereas in this, it's totally opposite. Really interesting mechanic there. I love that sort of massive 3D building that you
the divider, you isn't it? So you can't see everyone. Yeah. I have to admit, that's what sort of drew me to it when I saw it on the table first time in this and a couple of years ago.
I mean, it feels like such a gimmick. However, it's really well constructed because it's obviously quite a size, so you can't see over. It's got that built-in dice tower.
Yes, it is.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
And obviously, you've also got the objective stuff on the top.
Yeah, so you've got the character's health, don't you, and their fear meter, don't you?
Yeah. So that's kind of visual to everyone.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's really, really good. The game itself felt, on our part, fairly easy.
Because you won twice.
That was the problem, wasn't it? It was like we won twice, but we won twice quite easily.
Yes, yeah.
Now, it could have been because we had... like a combination of characters which seemed stupidly overpowered.
Yeah. Plus, you found like some items at the right time as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
See, I think I had the character that could like fix something.
You have to fix a radio 5 times find 5
but
keys.
But I got like an equipment that allowed me to...
Do it 3 times.
Do it 3 times or something. Yeah, it was crazy. So it was like, well, we know where I'm going.
Hmm.
And as long as I wasn't just standing there waiting for you to come and get me, it got done really quickly.
Yeah.
But then you could still be in there and I might not even find you as well. So that's another plus for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah. Overall, though, for me, I really enjoyed the game. So I'd like to play it a bit more.
I really did enjoy it. I almost feel like that needs a double hidden movement. That game needs a double hidden movement agenda where you don't know where we are, but at the same token...
I know where you are.
Yeah, and you have to kind of do investigating things to discover where people are.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of had something similar to that in the second game, didn't we? When you changed your character and you had that ghost thing.
Yeah, so she can come off the board and you don't know where my movement is sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that did make it a bit more challenging, but I didn't think it changed the game all that.
No. Yeah, it's just from the theme of it, you're trapped in the house with a killer. It should be, right, the killer doesn't know where we are, but we don't know where the killer is sort of thing. Because, like you said, it just felt a little bit too easy with us knowing where the killer was at all times. It's like, that's not how horror films work.
Yeah.
This is true. Very, very true. But yeah, for me, I'm going to give it a first impression thumbs up. What about you?
Yeah, I did enjoy it. So yeah, I'd have to give it a thumbs up. But like I said, it feels like there should be some mechanic where it's, I don't know, based on noise or something, where you sort of have an idea where they are, but you don't know exactly where they are.
That's fair. What about you, Ant?
Yeah, I'll give it a thumbs up. I mean, I've only played it a couple of times that I have with you guys. It'd be interesting to see what you guys gets extra plays, the killer as well. And I've got the expansions as well. So I think there are different types of mechanics. I mean, there might be ones that James even mentioned, but I haven't even looked at the expansions yet. Thumbs up. But yeah, it would be nice to give you guys a go on the killer side of it.
I would definitely enjoy doing that. But yeah, I mean, if it's a game that you guys want to hear us talk about on the show, let us know.
Comment below, let us know.
I would definitely be interested in doing a game highlight on that.
Yeah. Mm. I'd like to mention one more before we move on, which is a game we actually played last night that I really enjoyed, which was Chinatown.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I loved that for the bidding mechanics. Mm. And the bartering.
The trading round.
That was really fun. When you got that out of the box, I genuinely thought that was a game that I was going to be a bit indifferent to. Just a bit, sure. Like, oh, it's a game, sort of thing. And when we got into that trading section, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It's a game that I've known about for donkey's years, because obviously this game is, you know, crazy years. I was, 15 years old at this point.
Yeah, it's quite old, yeah.
1999, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It's never a game that's... I'm sure I have played it at some point or another, but I couldn't remember a single thing about it. So I was as good as a noob in that game, and I really did enjoy it. The mechanics were very, very interesting. I definitely like the bartering system of, you know, trying to get something as cheap as you can, but knowing full well that everyone is out to get money, you know, and it just sort of, the theme kind of reminded me of like the Taiwan night market, which we've been playing.
Yes,
recently,
that was another
as well.
One we played, so yeah.
You know, and I'm just sort of like, oh, I could have like lots of different stalls all over the place and just earn 10 grand here, 10 grand here, 10 grand here. But then it's like, well, actually, do you know what? I kind of want to grow this. So I'm actually getting 50 grand from this one stall. Yeah. But you've bought the place, you know, you've got the place next to me, and now I've got to pay you ungodly amounts.
I think it was the other way around, Jason, wasn't it? You had something of mine, and then you decided to put your own antique shop there as well.
Yes.
Make out like you're so innocent.
Out of spite when you wouldn't pay my extortionately inflated
Look, I was trying to trade my tropical fish with you. You wouldn't take the tropical fish. None of you would take my tropical fish.
I took it in the end.
He did in the end, yeah. But yeah, I'm glad you liked it, James, because it's one of those ones that looks very basic and you're like, just like, But that trading round, I think, is the round everyone looks forward to when it comes to that part of the round.
Yep.
Obviously, because you get your money, you get your shops, and then you have to obviously chat about, well, you know, sorry, you get your bit of land as well.
Yeah.
And it's just that annoyance that, like, I've got three, now James has my fourth space. What do I do? Now I have to barter with him to, like, you know, get that piece of land. And then when he keeps saying, talk to me later, it's like, no, I want it now, goddammit. Yeah.
Talk to me in another round. Yeah. You can't afford my asking price, but you will next round.
Yeah.
It is really good fun. Yeah. I would say the one downside to it is, from the bartering side of things, is it could drag out quite a bit if...
Yeah, especially with five players, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. James, you got more to say on it? Or
I don't know. The only thing I can't decide whether I like or not is the fact that all of them are worth the same amount of money for the same amount of space, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that reference card we've got... So basically, I know exactly how much money you're going to earn from that.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
I almost feel that bartering round would be better if that information was almost hidden.
Yeah, okay.
So that you can't... It's like...
Or it's different every round or something.
Jason, for example, has got 5 of 6 spaces, and I'm sitting on the last space he needs to make his 6th building. But I look at that card and go, right, as soon as you've built that, you're going to earn this much.
Yes.
So give me more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we had that discussion afterwards, didn't we? It was like having that sort of reference card did help because, like, oh, like you said, Jack, I've just got the 5th tile and I've got the thing, and you're sitting on the 6th. I was like, well, I want to buy that from you, James. I'll offer you 100 grand.
Yeah.
But as you said, because you've got that reference, you know I'm about to earn 180 grand from it. And there's 3 rounds left, which means I'm actually going to earn, you know, 780 or something along that.
Yeah.
Line. You know, I'm going to earn over 700K from that. So no, you'd be damn stupid to sell that to me for 100 grand. You need to sell that to me for 300 grand at least.
And that's what I mean. I almost feel, I don't know how you do it because it would involve all the shops having different incomes.
Yeah.
But it would almost work better if that information was hidden so that I couldn't just go, right, you're going to earn this much in 3 rounds. So that's what I'm going to set my price at. It's like, no, I need to almost guess how much you're going to earn to set my price.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there is things you... I don't know how you would do it, because we're all using the same shop tiles. You need to know what you're going to be earning. So even if they were all different, you just look at, okay, well, that's what he's... Same difference. I don't know how they would fix that. I do understand what you're saying. Maybe it just adds to the complexity of the game, and that's why they didn't.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. It's almost like you need that reference card with all the shops having different things, but the lines blanked out, so you can't see it until you own it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'm totally on board with that, to be fair. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed that game. Thank you for bringing it over.
No, thank you for playing.
I look forward to playing that again. Any other games you want to talk about?
Can I just mention one more?
Yep,
I didn't want to bring it up because we played two versions of it.
Oh, okay, go for it. I think I know what it's going to be. Wow, what a name.
Yes. What a name. What a great game. I really enjoyed that. Again, I wanted to mention it because, again, you can play it cooperative or competitive. And when you introduced it to me and James, I think we decided the cooperative first just to get to know the rules of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Was a bit easy, but then we found out, we still enjoyed it. So let's try the competitive side. Which is a hell of a lot more fun as well.
Yeah.
And some of the mechanics and that about the sleeping patterns and chaos and all that as well.
Yeah.
Very, very clever. Nice acrylic standees as well for everything. Great with the theme of it as well. Yeah. Nice hospital theme of it. I really, really liked it.
Yeah. So basic gist of that game, the theme is you are on a night shift at a hospital. It's a 12-hour shift. You are doctors on that shift, and you've got to cure patients and stop the hospital from overflowing. Yeah, it is an interesting game. There's some interesting illnesses in it, Whiplash, which is just a metal guitarist.
Yep.
I forget some of the others. It's like an alien, a sumo wrestler.
It's got a little bit theme hospital type thing. But what I really like about it, even in the versus mode, is the slight... It's not what I would call co-op, the freeloader mechanic.
Yeah, the freeloader mechanic.
Because at the end of the day, you are doctors in a hospital, so you have to work together.
Yes.
As you know, it's like hospitals aren't run by people competing against each other.
So if you happen to be in the ward where someone, James has just treated someone in the ward, if I happen to be in the ward, I just immediately gain victory points because he's done that.
But I also like the reasoning behind that is that you don't just get those points. I get to use your skill board.
You do, yeah.
Yes.
But even if you don't use my skill board, I still get that
freeloader. Yeah, because you're in the thing, because you are a team.
Yes. But there's always a winner, right?
Yeah,
there's always a better doctor.
There's always a winner, but it's like it's that aspect of you are... I just think the theme works really well for a versus mode that you've still got that trade-off because, yes, the team would be working together to cure patients.
Yeah, and obviously if patients aren't cured and their timer runs out, they get better and leave the hospital.
Discharge, Jason.
Yeah, they're discharged from the hospital. Yeah, they leave the hospital in one way or another, be it in a...
I like the time limit on the patients as well, was good.
Yeah.
Yes, but obviously if you don't heal the patients, they
chaos happens.
They die.
You get a skull and crossbones token,
and everyone gets chaos tokens, which it could be anywhere between 1 and 3. And chaos tokens obviously are minus points at the end of the game.
That's
the key thing, though, isn't it? What we didn't mention is in the cooperative mode, you each have a bag, a silk line bag, so you can't see what's in that bag. And that's where all your victory points, all your chaos tokens and stuff go in there. So you're constantly trying to remember, how am I doing for chaos tokens? Because the only way to negate them is by sleeping and getting sleep tokens. But they're quite hard to achieve.
And that's when you rattle your brain, like, do I have enough sleep tokens in here to get that? Or have I got enough at all, full stop?
Exactly. And sort of in the competitive version, that's all done in the bags. In the co-op version, it's all open source, so we can see what we've got.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a bit easy.
It is one of those things where it's like Ant mentioned, that like the co-op mode was brilliant for learning the game and how it worked. But having played the versus mode, that's all I would want to play now.
Same.
Yeah, great fun. Really good idea to bring that up. That is actually one of the games we're going to talk about hopefully within the next month.
Nice.
So, yes. Let's have a quick talk about what's been happening in the industry over the past month or so. February is normally a time where it's quite quiet, and same with January. But there's been a few interesting things that have come up that I'd like to talk to you guys about, find out your opinions on it. One of the biggest ones, and I'll start with this biggest one, which is, of course, Cool Mini or Not, have always been a Kickstarter, company. They do a lot of their stuff on Kickstarter. They have horrific success on Kickstarter, and they have recently announced that they are moving exclusively over to the newer platform of GameFound. How do you guys feel about that? Is that an interesting thing for the industry, and why do you reckon they took that decision?
I think it's a fantastic decision personally. Again, I think it helps gamers that can't fork out hundreds and hundreds of pounds on Kickstarter straight off the bat, because let's face it, you know, times are tough at the moment just for a living crisis and whatnot. And when you've got something like GameFound where we can pay like £20 a month for so many months, is just a great opportunity to get these games that we really want to get hold of, or a second version of that we couldn't get because it was on Kickstarter in the first place.
Yeah.
So I think this is fantastic news for board gamers personally.
Yeah, I mean, obviously covering that is GameFound is the only way to get these crowdfunding games on a monthly
partial payment. Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, just to sort of clarify really, with regards to Call Mini or not, they did, I think it was something like over 60 campaigns on Kickstarter in total, like totaling over 100 million, you know. So they've made a lot of money on Kickstarter, but they've also made Kickstarter themselves a lot of money. So do you think that that's something that might actually spring up at a Kickstarter HQ? I was like,
maybe
GameFound is a bit more of a problem than we thought.
Yeah, it is that thing of, you have to wonder from the business point of view what caused them to go over in the first place. And I personally think it might be that pay monthly option.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they've made all that money from Kickstarter, but with people paying up front, how many more people who would have looked at those campaigns and gone, oh, I can't afford that.
Yeah.
Not in one hit. How many more people are more likely to back if they can go, oh, it's only X amount a month, I can manage that.
I mean, we all joke about Call Mini or Not and their Kickstarter campaigns, because they always have crazy amount of miniatures, you know, loads of stuff that you don't need, but you still want. But as you said, times are indeed tough. So I do wonder whether maybe they saw a marked decline in people going for that all-in option.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe this is a strategic decision, as James said, to go over there, risk the potential loss of exposure, because obviously Kickstarter is still a bigger platform.
Yeah.
But more people might now take that all-in option because they can pay for it over a certain amount of time.
I think it's important to say it's a bigger platform at the moment. A major company jumping to that one, Call Mini or Not, is...
I mean, arguably, they're not the first, because obviously GameFound is actually owned by a big game, you know, Awakened Realms. That's why Nemesis was on there.
Yeah.
So they, you know, Kickstarter is losing a lot of these big companies, which I know I've been very vocal about the fact that I don't actually agree with these big companies using crowdfunding, but I do openly sit here and admit that this is a seismic shift in that sort of, you know, that form of funding. Because Call Mini or Not are the big boys on that platform, and they've gone. You know, so I can only assume that someone at Kickstarter HQ is going to sit there going,
we need to bring in partial payments.
We've got to do something about this. What that's going to be, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. Well, maybe it's partial payments, but...
It is one of those things. They might also be suffering from, how can you phrase it, a bit of hubris, because they were the only game in town.
I mean, they were always the biggest game. They've never been the only game, but they were the game that everyone knew in town. So I can understand that. But do you think that's a big shift? Do you think it's going to affect the industry? Do you reckon it's going to affect
I can see other companies coming over as well, personally. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Maybe not like straight away, you know, but I can see them jumping over as well.
Yeah. I mean, what? GameFound's only technically, what, 2 years old at this point for its crowdfunding stuff? Because it's always been a pledge manager.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys use the crowdfunding platforms more. I mean, the other thing to talk about with that is I've heard in other people who use crowdfunding talking about it that Kickstarter seems to have gone more towards minis, like 3D printing and that. So there is that. Maybe it's not so much of a problem if their primary market has shifted towards funding of 3D printing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely possible. You do have to search through a ridiculous amount of STL campaigns, and
which you probably won't have to do on GameFound because it's set up for board games effectively.
Yeah, well, fair enough. It'd be interesting to see where this goes in the future, but for now, Call Mini or Not are now exclusively on GameFound. So that's news story number one. I wanted to talk about something not quite as good to start with. But then there is a bit of a silver lining towards the end of this this news bit, which is that Funko Games have recently had some major layoffs to their staff in the gaming division following their acquisition by Goliath. And of course, the game design team within Funko is Prospero Hall, very well-known game design team, have kicked out some amazing games. You know, to name a couple, Disney Villainous, they're the team behind that. You've got the Jurassic Park Legacy game, which received amazing success, as well as ridiculous amounts of others. But Prospero Hall themselves were part of the cuts, which was a bit of a shame. So I think there was like 30-odd staff working within the game division that have all unfortunately been laid off. Funko Games were still, in my eyes, fairly new to the game space.
Yeah.
But in a short amount of time, they've kicked out some really good games.
And they're not like massive, like crowdfunded ones sort of thing. No. They're ones that everyone can buy as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad, really, because there's still a few games that I really wanted to play of theirs. Like they brought out like a Texas Chainsaw game. I wanted to give that a go.
Yeah.
I still own one of theirs, which is that Indiana Jones game we played a few months back. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah.
I quite enjoyed that. So they can bring out some good stuff. So it's quite sad if they're going to knock on the edge.
Just quite a lot of their games tended to be IP based, didn't they? Because obviously Goonies game.
Goonies, that's it.
I think they did Jaws.
Ravensburg did that.
That was Ravensburg. Yeah. Okay.
They did a lot of DC and Marvel games. I remember you owning a couple of them.
Yeah, the actual miniaturized Funko Pops. Yeah.
I mean, you do have to wonder with a lot of that stuff, because obviously we all primarily know Funko for Funko Pop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, did they see the modern board game market and go, well, we'll jump into that and make a misstep, so to speak? Because they're not games that I see regularly being played around the place.
There are definitely some that they hit out the park. But yeah, I would say they definitely had a bit more of a mass market appeal to them. And I think that's the other thing, isn't it? And I'm definitely guilty of it. I didn't play Funko games for a very long time because I saw Funko as those really annoying figures that I really don't like, that flooded every market, you know, under the sun. And you could buy them everywhere from between £2 and £200. From what I could see, was very hideous, very basic figures.
Yeah, but I can't help but think that the vast majority of their games were done in the same way. Like, they might have had a couple, but how many games have they kicked out? Like, because I've walked past shops and seen the little Funko games with the Funko Pops. It's like, how much have you chucked at this? And I wonder how much you've got back, because it's like, people buy the figures because they're collectibles.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure that same market is going to go after the games
as well, yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see where that goes for Funko Games. As to like, are Funko Games no more? Are Goliath planning on actually continuing it with a very small amount of team? Or are they completely getting rid of it? Because I believe, from what I've been told or from what I've read, there's about 10 people from the original team that have been offered different positions within the new company. I
mean, if it is the case, then they've had a good run in today. It's not like they did like maybe five and then gave up on it. They've done quite a few. They've had their few stands at expos and essence the last couple of years. It's sad, but you know, let's just hope it's not gone forever.
Yeah.
I mean, the games are still available to buy and stuff as well, aren't they?
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah.
And I would like to try the Jurassic Park one at some point as well. Yes. So
yeah, I mean, the biggest news for that for me is the dissolvement of the Prospero Hall team, because they have created some amazing games. But as I said, there was a silver lining, and that silver lining is news that I was expecting to come out from it, which was that at least some of the original Prospero Hall team have formed a new consortium of game designers, because obviously their whole thing is you don't get named on the game designs. It is the team itself, which I believe, if I remember correctly, they are now called the Tempest Workshop.
So Funko's taken out the title now, is it?
So Funko is now got, they are now completely separate from Funko. They do not work for Funko anymore. It is a standalone company. Gotcha. However, the things to be noted by it, and it's an interesting one, is they are a design company. They are not a publisher, so they may well continue to design games
and get Funko to release
them. Now they're going to have to find a company to publish those games. So
interesting.
How do you think that's going to work? Do you think we might start seeing Prospero Hall, or what is now the Tempest Workshop, starting to pop up from different publishers, or do you reckon they're going to try and find one to latch onto?
It depends how they pop out, isn't it?
Yeah, there's advantages to playing the market effectively and having different ones, but like you said, they've kicked out some pretty well-known games, so I don't think they'll have trouble finding a publisher. I wouldn't be surprised if publishers have already reached out to them if they've already announced that they're reforming, just to say, hey, when you've got something, come and have a word.
Yeah, exactly. The one reservation I have from all of this is because of the way that they operate and that they don't give anyone credit for the games, it's just the team, you know, and this new company, if you will, is not the original team. It's some of the original team, but not all of it. The question I have is, well, who is it? Because, you know, and what experience do they have? Did they, you know, they worked on this game. Okay, cool. But how much of that game?
Mm.
Did they design 90% of it, or did they design 1% of it? You know, and have we just got a load of 1%ers in this new company? Mm. Because this could be like the worst of Prospero Hall, the people that literally only designed a colour or something along those lines. You know, I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that bad, but...
Hey, time will tell, eh?
What if it was? Time will tell.
Time will tell. And they'll just get rid of them as well.
Well, yeah, obviously. But that's always the risk, isn't it?
It is,
you
mate.
Don't know.
It is.
You just don't know. But yeah, Tempest Workshop, they are a new thing, apparently. Looking forward to seeing what they do. Interesting one for all of us. Unmatched.
Mm-hmm.
Unmatched. Ooh. We're talking about Unmatched again. So since we last talked about Unmatched, we have had a new set that has dropped or is imminent in the UK, which is, of course, is it the Rising Sun?
Suns and Origins.
Suns and Origins, that's it. Which is a Japanese theme, like a two-player set.
It's a two-player box set, that one.
Can't remember who the characters are, though. Can you remember?
A samurai and an archer or something. Yes, I don't know.
Something along those. Are you liking the look of the set?
Yes, I do like the look of it. It's I like the whole Japanese theme, ancient theme to it. So it's one I would definitely like to play. I'll wait for you to buy it, though.
Yeah, well, of course, that's what everyone does. I am buying it, so
yeah, you know,
I've right got then. To complete the set. But we also had the new IP was announced in the past few months, which is, of course, The Witcher. You've already mentioned that program once today already. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is based on the games as opposed to the TV show.
Right.
Have you seen much about it? Or
I knew it got announced. I think you like sent me a picture of it a couple of months ago, and I've not heard a peep since, honest. So
I think we've got three confirmed sets so far,
right?
Three characters in each set. Is it something you're personally excited about?
If it's a four player, then yes.
It's not.
Oh, then no.
It's three.
It's three.
It's like the Marvel sets.
Okay. All right. That's doable then. That's doable. Yeah. I can't see The Witcher IP being just a measly two player one. That's a bit, yeah.
But three
will do. That's not too bad. Okay. There's three of us, so I'll take it.
Are you planning on buying this?
Because no, I'll wait till you buy it, mate.
This is the thing. This is
you need the collection, thing. Not me.
I'm genuinely not interested whatsoever.
He doesn't do the IP ones.
That's true. You haven't got the Marvel stuff, have you?
No, I've only got the Jurassic Park ones. But genuinely, I'm kind of trying to steer clear of the IP stuff. But also, I just don't care about The Witcher.
Okay. I do quite like the game, so...
But James, what do you think? Are you into the TV show, the games? Or
no, I've never watched any of the TV show. I've not played the games. It's one of those things I've never got into.
I feel bad for saying it because I get the feeling that Henry Cavill comes smashing through the wall and start beating us up for not watching it.
The TV show is terrible anyway.
We're letting down the king of the nerds.
Hey, me?
This is
nerd.
Totally unrelated, but I actually deliver to one of the Netflix studios where they record some of the Witcher stuff.
Okay.
And like when I first started delivering there, they were just sort of like, oh yeah, this is the set for The Witcher, and my response was
meh.
And I care for what reason?
I guess I'll have to buy it then, Jason. So, only if you play it, though. There's no point in me buying it. No one's going to play it.
Genuinely, I'll play it. Same with the Marvel stuff. I play it if people have got it. I'm just not interested in buying it. But, so we've got that. And finally, literally just the other day, we had another announcement for the more traditional Unmatched, which was, I believe, called Slings and Arrows, which I believe the lead character of that is Shakespeare.
Oh God, yes. Yeah. When you sent me this, I'm like, really? I thought you were joking when you sent me that.
Unfortunately not. It was indeed.
That's a four-player box, that one, isn't it?
That is indeed, because it's more of the original type of unmatched.
Have you got the characters? What are they?
Let's just have a quick look. Let me just get up the...
I know Shakespeare is one of them.
So Shakespeare is the top one. we've got Titiana. Is it Titiana?
We'll go with that.
Yeah. Hamlet.
Yep.
And the Wayward Sisters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you pre-ordering this, Jason? So
that's Shakespeare and three characters from various Shakespeare
plays.
Yeah,
I was going to say.
Yeah. It is the Shakespeare set, isn't it? Yeah.
Why is it called Slings and Arrows?
I don't know.
That's what the Japanese one should be. Oh, no, my... yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
What's your opinion on this? Go on.
The problem is I'm going to have to buy it to complete the set because I'm a completionist. I'm just really not that bothered. That's just such an uninspired...
Definitely not one to rush out for, is it?
Shakespeare, I can definitely understand. You know, everyone knows Shakespeare.
Yeah, yeah.
Hamlet, all right, I'll accept it. But like the Wayward, I'm sure they used to be called something else as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was like...
If you're going to do a Shakespeare set, like you said, like Shakespeare himself, Hamlet, okay. I would have thought Macbeth be one and another main character. It's been a while since I've done Shakespeare, but I don't think Tatiana is a particularly...
You could have done something like Othello or something like that.
Yeah.
It just seems a really strange set.
It's an odd mix.
Or Macbeth, something like that. I don't know. Macbeth, there's something they could have picked. Definitely. Yeah.
Come on, I mean, Macbeth, that's got to be the character that everyone knows.
Exactly, yeah.
See, now, I would actually deem this more as like an IP set because they're all related.
It's got to be,
to Shakespeare, whereas every other unmatched set you get four... The idea is four characters that... you would never see in a fight.
Does this mean you're going to make James pay for it?
I don't think I would be able to, but I will try.
It just doesn't sound appealing. I mean, I'm sure there's Shakespeare fan, no disrespect to Shakespeare or anything like that at all, but as a game, it's like I don't feel like I need to rush or play or pre-order or anything like that at all, considering it being one of my favorite games on match. So it's very odd, odd decision.
I just don't. Like I said, all the characters are, like you've got... Shakespeare himself and three characters from three different Shakespeare plays. So I suppose they are different in that thing because they're separated from each other in that respect. But yeah, I would have just expected them to be slightly more well-known characters. I mean, like I said, I'm not a Shakespeare fan, so Shakespeare fans might be yelling at right that they are well-known.
They're the most well-known.
It sounds like Unmatched is scraping the barrel now, aren't they,
mate? Yeah, it's just sort of, like I said, you know, I would have thought Macbeth would be in there because everyone knows Macbeth.
Yeah.
That's the play that you're not supposed to name, isn't it?
It's meant to be an unlucky play, isn't it, practice?
Maybe that's why. Maybe they didn't want to sign the death warrant on the whole thing. But who knows? There you go. A little bit of Unmatched news. Looking forward to trying this stuff, but I'm really not as stoked on those announcements as I was hoping I was going to be. But a couple more bits that I want to cover. This is a bit more Warhammer related. So, and
I'll take a seat then.
I know you're not as big a fan for this,
but no, as much as I like to.
He's reading a book that I lent him.
I am actually. That's true. But sorry, carry on.
But I think there's some interesting bits of news here. James, this one's more for you. But Games Workshop recently confirms that Warhammer Fest, that big thing that everyone really, really enjoys going to, will not return in 2024. And while it's not been confirmed as to why that is, the rumor mill states it's because of the lackluster disappointment reception fans of the brand and generally that event in 2023. I remember we talked about it at the time.
Yeah, we
being
did.
That it was an anniversary, it just seemed a bit lackluster.
Yeah, and I've heard from people who actually went to it that it was very much disappointing.
Yeah.
And yeah, like they basically dropped the ball with that one because it's... The thing is that I don't understand why they've cancelled it. It's like, because the previous years seem to have been like generally well accepted. It's like you drop the ball once on an anniversary, which, all right, you know, you messed up.
Yeah, slap on the wrist.
But to cancel the whole thing and just go, that smacks of throwing your toys out the pram.
Yeah. I mean, that was going to be my next question to you and to both of you. Does this seem like a bit of an overreaction to you guys? Because do a comparison. That is the Warhammer version of UK Games Expo.
Yeah.
And that's like people complaining about the bring and buy not being all that great. And then them just going, oh, well, we just won't do the whole thing then.
In all fairness, I mean, Warhammer has such a great presence at Expo itself anyway.
It does, yeah.
I mean, again, I appreciate people's fans of it, but does it warrant its own con?
I did wonder if that's the model that they're moving towards anyway, because not so much UKGE, which is a bit odd because they are a UK-based company, but a lot of the bigger reveals tend to have come at things like Gen Con.
Is it just cancelled for the year? Or is it cancelled full stop? We know there's a TV series coming, and I think more popularity will arise to that when that show comes out. So,
by my reading, it did not state that this was a permanent cancellation. It merely, and it was almost like a side note
right.
at the end of a post saying, oh yeah, and Warhammer Fest is not on the calendar for this year. You know,
There we go. So it's not just full on cancel. It's this year.
It's either, you know, all joking aside from me saying that they throw their toys out the pram, it's either they've decided to just have larger presence at cons that have already been organized to save money, or they're knocking it on the head for a year to basically do
a bit of regroup.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
soul searching, if you like. It's like, okay, we dropped the ball. We realize we dropped the ball. Let's take a year off and think about how we can come back
stronger.
Possibly, like Ant said, off the back of a television series.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if they know they're not going to do well at that con, it's a good thing to cancel it beforehand. I mean, if you've seen in the recent news about that Charlie and the Chocolate Factory thing,
where they
advertise that and it just ended up being... Could you imagine Warhammer Fest being like that?
Yeah.
So, hey, let's cancel it and let's just do something else.
My understanding was the actual event wasn't that bad. Mm. It was the same event it always was. It's just because it was the 40th anniversary of the company.
Ah, okay, right, gotcha.
People wanted something big to be announced.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't.
But, I said, I can't remember if this is accurate, so take with a pinch of salt. I seem to remember another con, and it might have been Gen Con a few months before, where they had announced some really big stuff.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And it's just sort of like, at the time it was being announced,
they didn't save anything.
People were saying, why?
Why is this coming out
why
now?
Why is this coming out now and not a Warhammer
this
Fest?
This is why we buy the tickets to Warhammer, and they're not cheap. The tickets to Warhammer Fest are horrendous.
Yeah, like everything else Warhammer.
Like, you know, people buy these tickets because that is usually where they go all out.
I mean,
they make their announcement.
It is, but part of that is one game system.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's a big game system with a lot of fans, but it's one game system. If things like UKGE can drop their prices on something like the NEC because they know they're going to get a wide range of people who are interested in different things, more mass appeal.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. I'm interested to see a bit more as to why they made that decision. But
yeah, I mean,
obviously time will tell.
Maybe over the years, the attendance has declined. That's the other thing. Because like they don't do it at the NEC anymore. When I was going to it, when I was sort of 16, 17, when it was Games Day, it was at the NEC.
Yeah. It's smaller venues now.
Yeah, that's...
I think it was in Manchester last year, if I remember correctly.
Mm.
But yeah, we shall see where that goes. One more bit of Warhammer news. This is an interesting one to me, especially as at least two of us will be there for this. But the Golden Demon Awards, which is, of course... Warhammer's big painting competition where the world's best painters submit models, and they usually look absolutely amazing. They are going to be hosting the European leg of the Golden Demons, will be held this year at Essen Spiel.
Ooh.
So, yes.
Yeah, but that is making me lean more towards Warhammer Fest basically diverging out to other cons.
Yeah.
Golden Demon was a big part of that.
Yeah. And to further that as well, though, that is the second round of the Demon thing, of the Golden Demon. The first part of it is actually going to be at Adepticon in the USA.
Yeah, I would be very interested. Like, I think it might do well at Adepticon. That might be the one that I was thinking of rather than Gen Con. Adepticon might be the one where they did all the big announcements just before.
Yeah, that's in
Warhammer.
March.
Yeah, so it probably was Adepticon, but I reckon it might do well there. I think it's a risk moving it to Essen. Because most of the Warhammer Fest people, and again, it's been a long time since I've been, but they were from the UK. To have those people have to go all the way out to Essen now to enter it. That I'm not so sure. Mm. It might do. There's obviously a lot of Warhammer fans in Europe.
Yep. Be interesting to see. Obviously, it's something I'm definitely going to check out when I'm in Germany for that. So yeah, Golden Demon, second leg of that is going to be in Essen. That's the biggest bits of news that I've seen this month that I think is
quite
relevant
a fair bit, to be honest,
to what we choose. Considering February is a very quiet month for news, there was some pretty big stuff.
A fair bit out of that.
There was. I mean, only one sort of really game announcement there from the Unmatched. Most of that was not what we would consider good news.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been a fair few game announcements, I guess, over the month, but nothing that I would deem as particularly newsworthy big newsworthy. But yeah, I'm fairly impressed with that amount of news, to be fair. Interesting new concept of a show. How do you think it went, guys?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Yes. I mean, it's good to go over the games that we played, you know, instead of just actually sitting around enjoying it. We can actually talk about them afterwards as well.
Yeah.
So that was good. News side, a couple of those was news to me, full stop, because I never knew about the Funko Pop stuff and whatnot. So that was quite shocking to hear. So yeah, I mean, James?
The news section I found very interesting because, like Ant said, I'm hearing most of that for the first time when you tell us.
Yep.
Because I'm not one of these people really that follows gaming pages, gaming news. I don't particularly listen to gaming podcasts and that kind of stuff. All that extra stuff that goes with it.
I'm glad one of us does.
I do all that for you. Yeah, no, it's something I've wanted to do for a little while. Obviously, we didn't for a long time because obviously we had Paul doing the news show. This isn't a replacement for Paul's
news show. But it's nice to have it once a month and not just like a bit of after every episode.
Yeah, so the idea is obviously when Paul is ready to come back, he can come back and do his weekly news show. He'll just bring you the news for the week. But we're going to be basically cherry picking the biggest news that we want to talk about. And we'll have a little bit of a conflab about it, what we think about it, rather than just, this is the news, bang, 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 here you go. That's what the news show will be for.
Yeah, when we were discussing the concept of it, we sort of decided that Paul's is like the headlines.
Yep.
And we are more like a talk show.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we bring it out, but we'll pick four or five different stories and actually go into a little bit more depth. Whereas the weekly news shows, definitely, here's the headlines, bang, 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 bang.
No opinions whatsoever on that show, but plenty of opinions on us.
Right here.
We are the opinionated people here at the Meeple Minded. But yes, I've really enjoyed this little news show. There's some little tweaks I'm going to make to the...
Sure, of course.
To the show's, you know, flow. Because obviously, as we get further on into years, more news, there's going to be more stuff for us to discuss. So little tweaks needed here and there, but I rather enjoyed doing it. Thank you very much for indulging me in this new type of show. But yeah, shall we head off for another week? Because I can actually say that now, because it's only a week Woo-hoo! Until the next one.
Yes.
I don't have to keep editing that bit out.
Highly entertaining. You do realise after this, next time we record, you are going to say, see you in two. Damn it.
Yeah. I wouldn't even surprise me if I do it on this show, if I'm completely honest. But yeah. Let's do that thing. Till next week. I have been Jason.
I've been James.
I've been Ant.
And you have been listening to the Meeple Minded podcast. Join us next week for more tabletop gaming goodness. Ta-ta and goodbye.